Chapter 38. Into the Unknown. The next few days held few distinctions. Due to the downpour of the night before, they were unable to ascend the steep, muddy road that had been hastily excavated from the hill during the summer months. They ascended the third day and headed northeast over a pleasant plain between the shard edge and the cliff. It waved with tall green grass and purple wildflowers that shocked the nose with a rich, pungent smell. Once they cleared the shard edge, they turned due east, the lush plain giving way to stunted, yellowing grass, the moist winds from the lake replaced by a stifling, humid heat. Due to the water needs of the caravan, they planned to press due east until they found the Kell River, which they would follow until it met up with the Dunnock River. The Dunnock River would take them into the Far Reach Mountains and the ancient Dunnock River Bridge. Regent Ogbith explained that the water would also provide a natural barrier of protection against attack. At the bridge they would resupply with food and animals brought in during the spring and take the Mora Road to Eldaluri Mora. The scouts reported that the road was intact and easy to travel. Going was slow despite the clear weather. The heat forced long stops to rest the horses and foot soldiers, and Regent Ogbith had to ration the water before they found the River Kell near sundown 2 weeks later. While everyone desperately wanted to stop and enjoy the abundant water, Regent Ogbith permitted only a watering of the animals before he demanded they press on. The River Kell disappeared into the dense cored forest to the south, and the regent wanted a good mile between the caravan and the forest before they camped. He preferred the open fields they had travelled through, for they afforded high visibility in every direction. The forest could hide an entire army. Given the composition of the caravan, Jen knew that the regent's decisions were for the best. The First Mother and Regent Ogbith had sent knights and soldiers to the Shard months in advance to clear the way, and the advanced scouts had found nothing. Since over 500 soldiers currently marched in the caravan, it was unlikely that they would unexpectedly encounter a force of threatening size along the way. If anyone wanted to get to the Shalane or the Ha'ulric, however, their best strategy would be to send a small, quick attack group to sneak or streak past the outer perimeter. Thus, Regent Ogbith kept to the open plains and short grass as much as possible, steering clear of even the smallest copse that obstructed the horizon. As Jen waited for the sun to sink and bring another scorching day to a close, he still thought that the best plan to get the Shalane to Eldaluri Mora over hundreds of miles was not in a lumbering caravan. It was with a small mobile group on fast horses. As it was, any enemy within miles could mark them easily by the dust thrown up from their passing. And besides being slow, if rain came, he feared the Shalane's heavy carriage would sink into the mud so deep it would be beyond hope of extraction. Jen had proposed his plan to Regent Ogbith a month before they left, but the regent rejected it, thinking they would arrive to find the road to Eldaluri Mora held against them despite the lack of evidence of enemies. Jen tried to explain that if the enemy blocked the way to Eldaluri Mora in numbers, 500 soldiers would be just as ineffective as 5. The regent had waved the idea off, grumbling about Jen being too young to understand. The regent's plan had worked so far, however. Their eastward crawl across the plain proceeded without the slightest sign of menace or danger. Faces that had been twisted with worry 2 weeks before relaxed with every mile forward, and laughter echoed through the camp with increasing frequency. This was doubly true wherever Jeff went. The young bard's infectious good mood and impeccable talent added flavour to the long, monotonous days. The hurt and anxiety Jen had found in the First Mother faded as the weeks passed, and the Shalane gained confidence in stride with her mother. Fenna was as bubbly as ever, though she was constantly with Jeff and brought him with her when she came to visit so he could record more of Jen's life. Jen's annoyance mounted with every visit from the exuberant bard. Whether it was Jeff's continual inquisition about Jen's past, his unrelenting flowery attitude, or his obvious feelings for Fenna, Jen didn't know. Maybe it was the way Fenna smiled when Jeff doffed his hat to her and winked. But whatever it was, Jeff bothered Jen like a rock in his boot during a long march. As Cord Forest faded behind, Jen sat up from his bed in the wagon, put his shirt on and grabbed his sword. The carriage he and Jaron shared for a bed bounced around more than usual as the ground grew harder and more strewn with rocks washed down with the river. Jen hopped off the wagon and walked backward past half of the dark guard and their apprentices. Volney saluted him, while Kimdan scowled down at him from astride his spirited bay. Jen returned Volney's salute and wished him well. The mess cart assigned to the Shalane's party was only a few wagons behind. Since they weren't stopping until after dark, Cookmaster Brulin would have nothing hot in the pot tonight. Jen settled for raiding the sacks for bread and wrinkled apples, taking several ladles full of water before walking at a leisurely pace several yards away from the sweat of horses and the dust of wagons. The low sun beat down against his neck, and the cool shadows of the Cord Forest beckoned to him in his memory. The wood had thick, new growth along its edges, an excellent place to hide, but a hard place to get out of quietly. Ahead of him, the land was still flat and featureless, though he knew it would turn hilly and finally mountainous once they joined up with noisy Dunnach River. Tactically, the passage along the River Dunnach presented a perilous and unwelcome challenge. To their right would run the swift, rocky river roaring down toward Lake Mora. To their left would rise the steep slopes of the Far Reach Mountains, vast and not well known even by Maywan, who had travelled them before the Shattering. She told Jen that the thickly wooded ravines and passes were too risky to be explored alone, and she usually travelled alone. Their only other choice was to build a bridge across the Dunnach and go through several tricky mountain passes, until they arrived at the abandoned fortress of Echo Hold and Echo Road, which connected to the Mora Road. Such a course was abandoned. There simply wasn't time to build the bridge across the deep water due to the difficulty of transporting men and supplies. Out of a habit he supposed belonged to Samian, Jen ate his entire apple, including the core, and spit the seeds upon the ground. The bread was tasteless and made him think of water again. He turned to jog back to the supply cart when he noticed Jeff and Fenner riding up the column in that general direction. Jen turned away, hoping they hadn't seen him, but the beat of horse hooves behind him indicated he had not escaped their notice. Talking with Fenner and Jeff at the same time was like trying to woo a girl while her talkative, drunk father sat on the porch between you. "Lord Blackshear, my good man," Jeff greeted him enthusiastically. "We're heading into dangerous territory now, aren't we?" Jane made sure his face was a cold, expressionless mask before looking up at the handsome bard whose long blonde hair flowed from underneath his smart green cap, complete with feather, that seemed impervious to the wind and dust. Fenner rode on the other side of him, face flushed and happy. She greeted Jen with a smile and a wave. "Yes," Jen answered. "Miss Fairdale?" Jen bowed to Fenner. Jeff waited for more of an answer, but got nothing. "Well, I was just telling Fenner how anciently ships floated lazily down the Kell, sails burning in the dusk while lords and ladies, elves and men danced on their festive decks. Those were the days to be a bard. Sure, they still do the same on King's Blood Lake, but something about a river accompanying my voice sets an atmosphere and a tone that strikes the heart. Our companions will need a performance tonight, I'll wager, now that we're headed into a great mountain range full of creatures and enemies unknown, mysterious and dangerous. Can you feel the excitement, Jen? Lands unexplored for hundreds of years. New songs to write and sing. My blood quickens at the thought. I'm sure you feel it yourself, as you have the heart of a bard." "Actually," Jen replied, "I can't help but feel that every step brings us that much closer to disaster. The Far Reach Mountains are not the type of place to inspire a jaunty tune, Jeff."
"You talk to Maywan too much," Jeff replied. "She seems about as happy as you are about the whole prospect of seeing a land that was once so full of wonders."
"The Dunnach River Bridge, Jen. Can you imagine?" Jen said, "Maybe she's tense because she's the only one on this caravan that's travelled these lands extensively. Do you know what the place we're walking on right now was called in the days of the First McKickian War?" Jeff screwed up his face into a mask of concentration, snapping his fingers as if to coax forward the memory with the sound. Jen thought it was an act to cover up his complete ignorance of the topic.
"It's just not coming to me at the moment."
"This place was called Ariku Mikkik, or in the common tongue, Mikkik's Fury. After Eldaloth was killed, Mikkik's armies drove men, elves and dwarves across this plain in a great slaughter, unleashing for the first time the foul creations he'd been breeding in preparation for many years. Near where we met up with the river is where the elven general Alemwe fell, head crushed by the club of a Gagon. Alemwe
was a mage fighter more powerful than any single person in this caravan, and he died with one blow, and was swept down a river tinted red with blood, before the Uyumark dragged his body to shore and ripped it apart. Those of his army unable to get across the river fought till death, and were then eaten for dinner as part of a grand celebration. Jen, Fenner explained, eyes aghast and hand over her mouth. Jeff's face slowly drained of blood. So you see, Jeff, he went on, there is no thrill in every footstep forward for me, and there shouldn't be for you either. If I listen to Maywin too much, you listen to her too little. Yes, well, Jeff said, working up as much levity and calmness as he could, I see your point, but there is a ray of sunshine in every storm. I intend to find it and live every moment in it. We shall be off, however. Fenner here is going to accompany me on a song I'm singing around the fire tonight. She really has a lovely voice, you know. I do, Jen replied, flashing her a smile. Fenner blushed. Of course you do. You must also accompany me sometime, Jen. Come, Fenner, one more practice and we're ready. Jeff galloped off. Fenner held back for a moment and said, I will see you later tonight, Jen. I promise. Jen waved. Nice talking to you, he said sarcastically. But he wasn't sure if she heard as she rode away after Jeff. Jen opened his clenched hand to find he had inadvertently crushed his bread into the size of a small egg while Jeff droned on. The upside was he was able to push the whole piece of bread into his mouth and finish it quickly. After he made a quick stop for more water, the sun finally sank behind the horizon, and he went to find Jaren. To his dismay, Torbrand Cairn had fallen back to the Shalane's carriage and was talking with her day protector. To make matters worse, Shertan joined them as Jen strode up. You're going to have to ask Jen, Jaren was saying, voice exasperated. He's on duty now. Jaren climbed down from on top of the carriage and inclined his head to Jen. Jen grabbed the bars and swung up to stand on the ledge at the rear of the wagon, awaiting a familiar conversation.
Jen, Shertan called to him, voice dripping with concern. We must insist that you let the Shalane join us around the fire. You are torturing her by cooping her up in there.
I am well, Shertan, the Shalane interjected through the bars.
Jen knew very well that the Shalane was not well. The magical brand on his chest let him know that her head throbbed terribly. Days inside the thick wooden wagon were hot, miserable, and lonely. Jen sympathized with her but didn't feel he could risk letting her out as the journey went deeper into dangerous territory.
You want the Shalane to come out and sit by a fire at night, Jen chastised. Have you completely forgotten the Three Willow Inn? Honestly, Lord Cairn, did you teach your boy nothing?
Cairn's eye twitched. Jen enjoyed baiting the Shadan almost as much as he enjoyed baiting Shertan.
Jen, the Shadan said, controlling his anger, we all know about the danger. I would have to agree with Shertan, and that is rare. We have the finest sword fighters in Kihol in this camp, not to mention enough mages and church folk to burn down the entire country of Rugoth. They've agreed to ward the camp strongly. The Shalane isn't going to be safer inside this box than she is around the fire.
No, Jen stated firmly. Shertan threw Jen his 100th exasperated look of the week, while the Shadan settled for rolling his eyes up in his head.
Really, Jen, Shertan went on, I would like a little of my bride left to enjoy once we get there. If you jail her much longer, she won't even be able to stand.
Jen stood as still as a statue until they capitulated and rode back to their normal position well in front of the Shalane's carriage.
Hello, Jen,
the Shalane said weakly once they'd gone.
Good evening, Shalane, Jen replied, removing the strain from his voice.
Alumira, remember? She said.
Jen admired her strength. There was no bitterness in her voice, though he could tell that she wanted out of the carriage almost as much as she wanted to run away from Shertan and hide forever.
You don't get to be Alumira until well after dark when everyone is asleep.
One moment. Jen turned and caught Volney's eye, signalling him forward. Volney had just been released from duty for the evening and came forward, eyes expectant.
My lord, he said, slapping his forearm across his chest and bowing at the waist. I'm ready to serve your will. How may I serve you and the lady?
Jen hated how Volney always lapsed into formalities when he got within 20 feet of the Shalane.
The Shalane hated it too. Could you fetch a pure man for me?
Forthwith, my lord.
Without Volney, Jen thought he might be able to forget he was nobility now.
What are you doing, Jen?
The Shalane asked.
Taking care of that headache.
You really shouldn't bother. A little headache isn't important enough for a pure man to deal with.
I sense the pain you feel, and that is no little headache. Besides, it is hypocritical of you to turn away healing when you insist on healing me if I so much as stub my toe.
I do not, the Shalane objected. I'm sure everyone else in this caravan has a headache, too. It's been a sweltering day. A sweltering month, actually. If the pure men went around curing every headache in this camp, they would...
Will you shut up and take the healing? Jen realized what he had said and was about to apologize, but the Shalane was laughing.
Did you just tell me to shut up, Jen?
Shalane, I'm sorry. I didn't mean only my mother dares do that. Everyone else thinks the Shalane shouldn't be talked to in that manner.
And you shouldn't be. My tongue slipped. It has been a long, frustrating day.
Jen ended lamely. The banging of the wagon across a patch of rough rock drowned out any further conversation. Jen had to steady himself as the carriage swayed back and forth. The first star winked into the crystal clear sky as the pure man arrived, and a cool breeze from the north cut through the stale air, bringing welcome relief. Full dark had come by the time the pure man finished the healing ritual for the Shalane while sitting on the back of the bouncing carriage. The caravan pressed on for 2 more hours, leaving the edges of the Cord Forest well behind them in the dark. Finally, Regent Ogbith called for a halt, eliciting a chorus of grateful mumbling. The horses were cared for and a fire built in the centre of the ring, casting a cheery light in the darkness. The cookmaster distributed a meal little better than what Jen had scrounged for himself to those inside the circle. Jeff's rich voice could be heard everywhere, and Jen gritted his teeth every time he heard it. Lighting a fire was bad enough, but each night Jeff ensured a general ruckus that Jen was sure would announce their presence to even the deafest Uyumark within 50 miles. Jen expected the carelessness would continue until an Uyumark arrow taught them better. Jeff lifted weary spirits, and that service meant more, apparently, than security or stealth. Jen climbed down from the roof of the carriage and sat on the small ledge by the door.
Fools, it was Maywan, speaking in Elvish. They will kill us all. Wild places are not for loud voices and bright fires.
She approached from outside the circle, face turned down in a frown and with a bow in hand.
You read my thoughts, Jen replied in the same language. They still pressure me to let the Shalane come into the firelight.
Maywan sniffed indignantly.
The Shalane would be safer, Jen, if you and I were to take her to Eldaluri Mora alone. Mark my words. I have some bad news.
What is it?
The deep scouts are 2 days late. They were to scout all the way to the Dunnock River Bridge and make contact with the advanced party there. Regent Ogbith insists it is nothing to worry about. I worry. Be wary, Jen. I am increasingly uneasy, and that feeling should not be dismissed when it comes from one as old as I am.
My ears are turned to you and the wind, Kyena, Jen replied. I wish you led this caravan not only in direction, but in comportment.
Maywin's sharp look startled him.
Did you call me Kyena?
She asked, face tense.
Yes, I suppose I did.
It seems to fit you,
Jen improvised. Kyena was Samian's nickname for his daughter, the word meaning leaf daughter. Maywin regarded him narrowly.
Try not to use it again, she said, marching stiffly toward the fire.
Jen shook his head and chastised himself for letting his tongue slip for the second time that evening. He took special care to not say much when Mirel came over, Cadean in tow, to chat a little with her daughter. While Mirel never questioned Jen's decision to keep the Shalane confined, he couldn't miss the pain on her face over her daughter's plight. After she left, Jen heard the Shalane settling near the door slot, opening it as she often did in the evening so they could talk. Since Fenner's night visits were increasingly infrequent, the Shalane and Jen talked more than they ever had.
What did Maywan say?
The Shalane asked.
I couldn't understand it, but it wasn't happy.
She worries, as I do, that we are being too careless. Fires and singing in lands so unknown is foolish.
She also says the scouts sent ahead to the Dunnock River Bridge have not returned and are 2 days late.
Do you think something has happened to them?
The Shalane asked, and Jen could detect a hint of nervousness in her voice.
I think so, Jen replied. The terrain is easy and the weather cooperative. Unless they greatly misjudged the distance to the river, which I doubt, then I see little excuse for them to be as late as they are.
Maybe they got lost.
If the best scouts in Rugoth got lost following a river, then we really are doomed.
The Shalane remained silent for some time. Jeff played music and told stories, to the delight of everyone. Ewan Shadan Cairn seemed to enjoy himself, though Jen found his former master's eyes on him more than once. Fenner sat to the right of Jeff, clapping and dancing as the bard played his lute to perfection. Jen suppressed a wave of professional jealousy. If Torbrand had left Tol Nor alone, Jen thought he would probably have been a lot like Jeff, minus the annoying qualities. Of course, he also would have never come to know Fenner or the Shalane.
So how are things with Fenner? The Shalane asked when Jeff took a break.
Jen shrugged.
How would I know? I could tell you, however, every one of Jeff's thoughts. I swear the man never shuts up, and he never leaves her alone. She doesn't seem to mind him, though. Quite the opposite, in fact. I can't blame her. Jeff's a handsome man, even if he is a little old for her. And he is the best at what he does. He plays the lute much better than I ever.
Jen, the Shalane interrupted, you're rambling.
Sorry. All I'm saying is that compared to Jeff, I must seem drab and boring.
The Shalane chuckled. Oh, yes. Jen, one of the best sword fighters in the world, protector of the Shalane, gone from serf to noble for facing down demons and dastards, you're a bore a minute.
Look, Jen, the Shalane continued, you hardly have the chance to see her any more, so it's natural that you feel that she's getting away from you. But every morning when she comes to spend time with me, the first question she asks is, how is Jen?
And then she spends the rest of the hour gushing about Jeff, right?
No! My goodness, Jen, you really are out of sorts this evening. I won't say that she doesn't talk about him, but she still cares for you, Jen. Make no mistake.
I thank you for the reassurance. I'm sorry for my mood. I'll try to be more controlled.
Jen realized the admission of his insecurities might lessen the Shalane's confidence in him during a difficult time for her, and he didn't need the Shadan staring at him to make him remember that the slightest weakness could be used as a wedge for others to move him out of his place.
Please don't, the Shalane commented unexpectedly. You telling me to shut up earlier was probably the high point of my trip thus far.
Jen shook his head. He couldn't remember a single story or poem where a woman was cheered by being told to shut up.
Whatever the Shalane said, Jen wasn't going to lose his control, not over anything.
He couldn't afford to do it. He slid off the back of the carriage and stood at a rigid attention, turning his concentration outward.
Oh, the Shalane continued, remembering something. This may not be the right time to tell you this, but Fenner mentioned this morning that Kimdan had renewed his attentions to her too.
Jen beat down the feelings and let them slide away, leaving himself calm and self-possessed. The Shalane offered no further comment. Away at the fire, a new song started, and Fenner's voice, clear if unpolished, rose into the night. Jen recognized the song Jeff had chosen for the duet. Emereth's Journey, the tale of a young woman who went to find a warrior husband who had not returned from a bloody battle and, after finding his body, fell in love with a pure man who was preparing it for burial. Jeff and Fenner sang short stanzas in counterpoint to each other as their grief over the slaughter of war gradually changed to love. Jen doubted Jeff's song selection was an accident. They finished to much applause, and both Mirel and Jeff gave Fenner enthusiastic hugs. Maewyn stood at the edge of the firelight, scowling at the proceedings.
I had no idea she could sing so well, the Shalane exclaimed.
With training, she could be a great bard, Jen replied, though I think her station precludes it from being a possibility. She remembers the words and doesn't forget a tune if she's sung it once.
Fenner gradually broke away from the crowd. Jen pretended not to notice her approach.
Well? She asked, face beaming. What did you think?
Miss Fairdale has a most luxurious voice, Jen complimented her, bowing.
It was wonderful,
the Shalane followed enthusiastically.
Fenner smiled at the praise and had Jen help her stand on the back of the wagon so she could whisper through the bars to the Shalane.
While Jen couldn't hear everything they said, the name Jeff came up more than once, with a couple of Kimdans thrown in for good measure. Jen tried to ignore their talk, and soon it was over. Fenner gave him a peck on the cheek and, with a hasty goodbye, practically sprinted back to the fireside where things were starting to pick back up. "So, Shalane?" Jen asked. "How is Fenner doing?"